It is Monday, January the 29th. This is VOA's International Edition. Many thanks for joining us. Coming up in the wake of latest attack in Afghanistan, is it time to renew peace talks?
I don't know under the circumstances who is going to be willing to talk to these murderers.
Also ahead, Iranian Americans imprisoned in Iran.
Bakir Namazi is an 81 years old American citizen, along with his son, actually, both wrongly imprisoned in Iran with 10-year sentences.
President Trump's first State of the Union speech before Congress, plus addicted to social media. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Reuters is reporting Kabul is in despair today following a Taliban suicide attack that happened on Saturday, leaving more than 100 people dead and at least 235 wounded. It is generally being viewed as the worst attack in months in Afghanistan's capital. For some perspective on all of this, VOA's Victor Beatty speaks with Indiana University scholar Nazif Shahrani, who said attacks like this one are on the increase.
There's no doubt that there is desperation of some kind going on. One possibility is that for the first time, I think under this president, maybe there is pressure on, more pressure, direct pressure on Pakistan, and that Pakistanis are cornered and they're using their proxies, essentially the Taliban, to send messages to the United States or to President Trump in his Defense Department that they can cause a lot of trouble for them, and that, as usual, they wish to be recognized as the, you know, the ones who are running the show, in that if their interests are threatened, they are going to defend themselves. And their defense, of course, is violence by Taliban in the country where United States is promising to bring about peace and stability.
Are you suggesting that Pakistan is complicit in these recent attacks?
Absolutely, absolutely. There is no doubt about anybody's mind in Afghanistan that these are done by the order of Pakistan. And to and of course, people who suffer, as usual, have been Afghans and innocent people getting killed. So that Pakistanis make a point to Trump that don't push us too much and we can cause more harm.
Is it time now for some sort of a peace process to be re-energized?
I don't know under the circumstances who is going to be willing to talk to these murderers. And I think people inside the country, if you listen to men on the street, they are also talking about the incompetency of this government of unity, that they have not been able to manage anything that well, and that there are repeated calls that both Abdullah and Ghani should resign, that they're incompetent and they haven't been able to manage anything, especially the security situation. I think one has to look at, from now on, you know, how people may react and respond collectively against the incompetency of this partner of the United States, this government unity.
Former U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan Zalmay Khalilzad called for the Ghani government and its main political rival, the powerful northern leader Atta Mohammed Noor, to, quote, come together and resolve their differences. In a Twitter account message, Mr. Khalilzad said, fighting terrorism and protecting the people is job one. I hope they rise to the occasion.
Yes, I've heard that Khalilzad is in Kabul and is trying to, I think, maybe draw attention of the Trump government to himself more than to Afghanistan. He obviously hasn't been able to get any job in this Republican regime. And the people, if you read also the social media in Afghanistan, they blame him for much of what has happened to the country, both in terms of messing up the constitution and also the policies of tribalization and helping a particular clique that he is with in, or did when he was there. So there's a lot of antagonism against him within Afghanistan, but I think he's making these noises probably to draw attention of the government here to give him some kind of work. Assuming that he knows Afghanistan better, and he doesn't know Afghanistan, and he doesn't care about Afghanistan, has never done. he's interested in himself. So let's watch and see whether people in Washington will call on him. I hope they wouldn't, because he doesn't have the support of people inside Afghanistan, and it may be a disaster to send him again as an envoy or giving him some kind of a formal position to do something on behalf of the United States. I'm telling you that this is not for Afghanistan, it's for him to draw attention here in the U.S.
U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley was in Kabul recently, and she came away saying the strategy that the U.S. has put in place is working, pushing the insurgents closer to the peace talks.
You know, the problem is people who go from Washington, they go with all the security apparatus protecting them, and the only people they talk to are these corrupt government officials in Kabul. They have no idea what's going on the streets or in the countryside. Their information is really absurdly wrong, limited, and, again, protective of those partners that they supposedly have in the presidential palace or the executive officers building and so forth. They don't see, they do not see Afghanistan. They cannot see Afghanistan. They only see these, ultra-secured places with people who are not credible to give the accurate information about what's going on in the country. So I think, unfortunately, Ambassador Nikki Haley and many others who go from the State Department do not get the correct picture of the country.
Dr. Shirani also noted the offer from Indonesian President Joko Widodo to send Indonesian Islamic scholars to work with similar scholars in Pakistan and Afghanistan to resolve these issues might not achieve anything. He believes religion is no longer part of the issues and has been instrumentalized, he says, by everyone in the region. Dr. Shirani says the current issues have very little to do with Islam. Nazif Shirani is a professor of Central Asian and Middle Eastern Studies at Indiana University, Bloomington. He was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. An 81-year-old Iranian-American man imprisoned in Iran, Bakir Namazi, has received a 4-day leave from the Iranian government until Thursday this week after being discharged from a prison. Earlier this month, Namazi, who was detained in 2016 and later convicted of espionage charges that he denied, was taken to the hospital for the fourth time in the last year. Jareb Genzer is Namazi's lawyer and founder of Freedom Now, which is a U.S.-based nonprofit, non-governmental, and nonpartisan organization that works, in their words, to free individual prisoners of conscience through focused legal, political, and public relations advocacy efforts. We asked him about his client.
Bakir Namazi is 81 years old, American citizen, along with his son, actually, both wrongly imprisoned in Iran with 10-year sentences. Bakir has had health problems for many years. He previously had a triple bypass, and his health deteriorated rapidly in prison, in Iran's notorious Evin prison, really since his imprisonment in February of 2016. He has had to have a pacemaker installed on an emergency basis, hospitalized four times in the last year alone, including last week, with shortness of breath. He turned white. And his blood pressure had dropped precipitously as well without any explanation. And so this has been a long time in the works, and we're obviously pushing hard to make this temporary reprieve a permanent one.
In October of 2015, the Revolutionary Guards detained Namazi's son, Siamek, a businessman in his mid-40s and also who has dual U.S.-Iranian citizenship, as he was visiting family in Tehran. We asked Genzer, have the Namazis been in prison this whole time?
So Siamak Namazi was detained initially in the summer of 2015, initially for questioning. He had come to Iran to visit his parents who were living there, and then was told he couldn't leave and was interrogated regularly by the Revolutionary Guards until he was then arrested in October of 2015. Unfortunately, Siamak Namazi was left behind in the prisoner swap that President Obama did in January of 2016 that accompanied the entry into force of the nuclear deal. There were 6 Americans imprisoned and 5 were released, 1 left behind, Siamak Namazi. And the family at the time was told by then Secretary of State John Kerry that the foreign minister of Iran, Foreign Minister Zarif, had said that he'd be out in a few weeks. And instead, in a few weeks in February of 2016, Bakir Namazi was detained. And it was in October of 2016, a number of months after that, when both of them on the same day got 10-year sentences for collaborating with the enemy of the United States, or, you know, claiming that they're, of course, spies, which on the face of it is ridiculous.
That is Jerry Genzer. He is founder of Freedom Now, a U.S.-based nonprofit, as well as non-governmental and nonpartisan organization that works to free individual prisoners of conscience. They use legal, political, and public relations advocacy efforts.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News.
President Trump will be delivering his first State of the Union address to a joint session of Congress later this week. Lawmakers and worldwide TV audience expect to hear the president's priorities for 2018 in both domestic and foreign policy. He is looking to shore up public support after a controversial first year in office that saw a victory on tax cuts, but also included numerous distractions and controversies that led to historically low poll ratings for a new president. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has a preview of the speech.
Mr. Speaker! The President of the United States!
It is a ritual of American democracy. A presidential address to Congress that is equal parts substance and pageantry. Trump spoke to a joint session of Congress last year, but it was not considered a State of the Union address because he'd only been in office a few weeks.
I am here tonight to deliver a message of unity and strength, and it is a message deeply delivered from my heart.
This year, the president is expected to highlight the strong U.S. economy.
And I will say our country is doing really well. Our economy is perhaps the best it's ever been. You look at the job numbers, you look at the companies pouring back into our country, you look at the stock market at an all-time high.
So far, though, the surging economy has not helped to boost Trump's public approval ratings. And Democrats complain he's not clear about his priorities. Senate leader Chuck Schumer.
Our Republican leaders don't want to go ahead on their own. They're afraid of President Trump. They want to know what he'll do, but he doesn't tell them to do anything, and he usually tells them, you do it yourselves. We get paralysis.
The speech is a chance for the president to build public support, says Republican Morton Blackwell.
I'm confident things are going to turn around in terms of the poll with respect to the Republican versus Democrats. I think the president's popularity is going to go up.
Trump, however, faces a sharply divided country, says Democrat Jim Kessler.
These speeches give you a bit of time to get, you know, reintroduce yourself to voters. A lot of voters have made up their mind about him, though.
The Russia probe will be a major backdrop for the speech, including reports the president ordered special counsel Robert Mueller fired last year, only to back down when his White House counsel threatened to resign. The investigation figures to be an issue in this year's congressional elections, says analyst John Hudak.
The Mueller investigation is a cloud that hangs over this administration's head continuously, and it will also be something that becomes a lens through which 2018 voters judge the Republican Party.
In addition to the economy, trade, and immigration, Trump is expected to address foreign policy challenges, including North Korea, Iran, and Afghanistan. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
VOA will have complete coverage of the president's speech to Congress beginning on Wednesday at 1:45 Universal Time. And speaking of time, it's time right now to see what's happening on social media. Lori London is here with the latest. What you got, Lori?
Well, Steve, we talk a lot about the power of social media to build businesses, to get messages out there, to solve crimes, and on and on and on. But, you know, we've also heard a lot lately about social media's darker side and how it can get people depressed, it can zap up time, and, of course, the addictive nature of it. You know, like, well, waking up in the middle of the night because you hear an alert ping on your phone only to hear about the latest President Trump tweet storm. Or what about seeing people in restaurants? Instead of engaging with each other, they've got their heads buried in their phones. Well, apparently social media addiction is becoming very widespread. From games to social media networks, they're all designed to feed that addiction. And how about feeding that addiction with an app to cure you of it? Yes, there's now a growing market for apps that do just that. And the latest one is called Mute. It was launched for iPhone this month. Others include Space and Moment. Now, Mute tracks how often you open your phone and how much time you spend on it. And then when your screen time decreases, it praises you. Moment sets up daily limits on usages and tries to force you off the device by bombarding you with notifications. And Space helps you set goals to change the habits. So as the addictions grow, so do the number of apps looking to combat the problem. And the news really isn't all that bad. People are waking up to this social media, smartphone addiction habit, and they are trying to break free of it, as seen by again, by the growing demand for apps that help break the cycle. But before you go turning off your smartphone or logging off of social media, let's talk about something that is trending right now that will ultimately take your eyes off the screen and into the sky for a real-life show. Twitter is abuzz about an extremely rare celestial event coming this week, a supermoon trifecta. On January 31st, there will be a super blue blood moon. U.S. space agency NASA says it's three separate events colliding. A closer-than-usual approach of a full moon, which will be bigger and brighter, or a supermoon, while the lunar eclipse adds the blood, or that reddish hue, while passing through the Earth's shadow. It becomes reddish because the sun, Earth, and moon will be aligned perfectly. And because it's also the second full moon of the month, it's a blue moon. Thus the name, Super Blue Blood Moon. And by the way, it is so rare that the last time there was a Super Blue Blood Moon, which is also trending with the hashtag Super Blue Blood Moon, the last time was in 1866.
Wow, seems like only yesterday. I have to applaud you to being able to say super blood. Well, you know what you said, huh? Many thanks, Lori. That's VOA's Lori London. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
An Australian-led team of scientists found evidence that suggests coral has a greater chance of getting a disease if it comes into contact with plastic waste. The researchers say they studied more than 120,000 corals in and around Indonesia, Myanmar, Thailand, and Australia. The examined corals either had contact with waste plastic or no exposure to the material at all. The researchers found the chance of coral with disease increased from a rate of 4% without plastic contact to 89% when corals interacted with the waste material. While the team didn't find out specifically how plastic spread disease to coral, they did note that the material does provide an environment that encourages growth of microscopic organisms that could pass along disease should it come into contact with coral. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. Time now for a little something from the world of music.
I know that when you look at me, there's so much that you just don't see, buddy. You will only take the time. I know in my heart you find. Oh, the girls are scared sometimes. Who isn't always strong? Can't you see they're hurting me? I feel so all alone. I wanna
In popular music, there is a growing genre, cover versions or cover songs, often just simply called covers. These are new performances or recordings of previously recorded commercially released songs by someone other than the original artist. At one time, cover songs had a negative connotation. They were seen as songs performed by less talented and less successful acts, who actually were stealing the superior work of the composer to make some quick money. But these days, they are typically recognized as one artist paying homage to another in a show of admiration.
Each day I play the role of someone, always in control, but at night I come home and turn the key. There's nobody there, no one cares for me. Oh, what's the sense of trying hard to find your dreams?
Glennis Grace is a YouTube sensation with more than 10 million fans. She takes on a song that many have tried to sing but could hardly ever even come close to the original sound of Run to You, made a hit by superstar Whitney Houston. Her fans say Grace gets very close.
And keep me safe from harm. I want to run to you.
Probably the most covered song ever, Adele's hit Hello, is one of the most popular on social media. Hardly anyone matches the great reggae sound, though, of Rosie Delma and Conqueror, who live in the Solomon Islands and have more than 77 million views of this song on YouTube alone.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like me to go over everything. They say that I'm supposed to heal ya, but I ain't done much healing. Hello, can you hear me? I'm in California dreaming.
In Alberta, singer-songwriter Daniela Andrade has millions of internet fans who fill theaters all over the world when she comes to perform. Doing covers often opens the door to Andrade's own songs, which are very popular downloads on many music websites. Here she sings Darles Barkley's super hit, Crazy.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. Just knew too much. Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Possibly.
Daniela makes me a little crazy sometimes. Love her music. I own a bunch of it. You should check her out. Daniela Andrade. Listen, many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Always good to have you here. Up next is the latest world news, and we hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Daryl Smith, I'm Steve Norman. We're all in Washington, and we hope you have a super Monday. Now a bit more from Daniela Andrade.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government, through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, launched a civil society and media strengthening project in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, in mid-January. It is called Boresha Habari, or Better News. Implemented in coordination with nonprofit organizations Internews and FHI 360, the Boresha Habari Project will collaborate with Tanzanian partners, including the Media Council of Tanzania, Tanzania Boro Initiative, and Jamii Media, to improve professional capacity among journalists and support an open media environment. Over the next 5 years, the Boresha Habari Project aims to work with media houses and radio stations in Dar es Salaam, Zanzibar, Iringa, Mbeya, Morogoro, Arusha, Manyara, Dodoma, Tanga, Mtwara, Mwanza, and Kigoma to improve their professional capacities. Specifically, Boresha Habari will provide media outlets with training and technical assistance, help them adopt new digital technologies, and strengthen their management and financial viability. The project will also train civil society organizations to effectively partner with the media. The U.S. government is committed to supporting the professionalization of the Tanzanian media and civil society, particularly empowering women and youth to raise their voices and concerns effectively as both producers and consumers of information, remarked USAID Mission Director Andy Karas during the launch event. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Tanzania, to help build a strong and vibrant civil society supported by a free and independent media.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.